Peter Kerrigan, Reel 5.
Existence at that time. There wasn't any one unionism, apart from the split, and that I did another union, so to speak, there. It was only later that there was first one union in Scotland, which was really the preliminary to ensuring that the Miners' Federation would become a miners' union, national union, although there are still the remnants of that because there's a terrific amount of autonomy in Scotland, Wales, Yorkshire, Nottingham, Lancs, etc., of these unions. Of course, there was also, you remember, in the miners' organisations, the continued split where the company union of the Nottingham Union was still operating, assisted by the levy that the miners' owners paid to the union to keep it going.
Nevertheless, although this seems a sort of logical development of party policy, it must, from a philosophical point of view, have been quite a change, say, from 1926, the time of
Absolutely.
The strike, to 1936, when you're collaborating with the bourgeoisie in order to get a popular front against fascism. How did you react?
Collaborating with the bourgeoisie is not exactly the way I would describe it, because, in fact, there wasn't, apart from when you had a government like in Spain taking place with the communists operating in it. But if you take the position generally, you've got to remember that it was, so to speak, acting along similar lines to them, you know, or with them, for certain common objectives. You
but
see?
How philosophically did you react? I mean, when in 26 it was almost possible to think in terms of revolution, and yet in 36 you were forming part of a consolidated, stable government. Didn't that seem a big philosophical shift to you personally?
Well, I'm not so sure. It was a shift. Look, I'll put it this way. When you say about the revolution, I remember attending classes as a young shop steward in 1923 in Glasgow, North Frederick Street. The father of that young fella that I'm talking about, Jim Messer, was the chairman of the educational class. And in 1923, I remember asking the question of John Ross Campbell, who was our tutor, Johnny Campbell, who was the man I mentioned with Pollitt on this line. I put it rather more positively, would the revolution take place in Germany this year? And of course, Johnny, I remember, quite carefully and rather diplomatically explained to me that there was a possibility, but that there was this proviso and that proviso and the other thing, till it became clear to my dumb intellect that it was rather unlikely that it would take place. There was actually, of course, actions in Germany about that time. There was abortive movement in, was it Saxony or somewhere, as well. Now, I mention that just to show that already I had been coming through this process for some time, you know, and therefore I can't think of it, especially because I had been very, very active in the trade union. My branch of the union was always maintained the Trades Council, even when I was barred from being the vice chairman. I was still chairman of the the Industrial Committee, and I also was quite influenced by Pollitt, because I'd been to Scottish TUC as a delegate before the strike. That was in April 26. I had been afterwards in April 27 when I was moving or supporting a resolution that was condemning the leadership, which we got beaten overwhelmingly by 80-odd to 26. By the way, the man that supported me from the miners, the Scottish delegate, was a man called James Daly, father of the present Lawrence Daly, secretary of the NUM. So, and these experiences, you see, and therefore I suppose that I'm more or less Unthinking is the wrong way, but I was coming into this unity business, this fight, on the basis of practical experiences and really understanding in the process that this is the only way we're going to go forward.
So it was simply a question of what was practical, what
yes,
we could do.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. One question on this. When you got to Spain, or in the first year or so of the war, there was, it seems to me fairly clear, much talk about first the war, then the revolution. Let's get it all done first. And in fact, the Communist Party was very keen not to have this idea of revolution around, wasn't it?
Well, I'll put it differently.
Okay.
I would say that the Communist Party was concerned not to have people operating on the basis that they were going to try and carry through a revolution at this stage, which was the line that the PUM was advocating,
yes,
to some extent the anarchists, although they also had a more involved process. Although, in fact, in the fighting at the beginning, there was quite a lot of the unity with anarchist elements that moved up to Madrid. But then at Madrid, there were some queer things happened,
yes,
in that. Yes. And the leading anarchist, I forget his name, was killed, you know.
Durruti,
yes. And it was said it was done by his own people, I don't
That's
know.
Right.
But anyway, that's the position that was happening. And so it wasn't a question of sitting down and saying, right, we get the Popular Front going, we get the movement of unity, we have the victory, and then we start on the revolution. It was much more than that. It was more than that in the sense that fascism had to be defeated. This was the thing that was absolutely, basically essential for any hope of any advance anywhere in the world afterwards. And it's been proven by what's happened in Spain since then, when fascism wasn't defeated and when the victors allowed the thing to go on afterwards, when little things would have finished them at that time. So that you've got to remember that it was the practice of the policy as well as the sitting down and thinking of the objective. Naturally, we were for the revolution. There's no doubt about that. But the processes weren't seen at that stage. It's just simply as soon as we get the victory, then we go ahead for the revolution. Implicit in some of the decisions that were being taken by the government on land and all that sort of thing was the laying of the basis for the advance to socialism. Mm-hmm. And already I think the Spanish party was showing some of the political ability that has developed even more over the past years in working out its independent line. And they've done it with some rather disapproving actions and attitudes on the part of other parties in the world communist movement. And they were among the first to make these propositions, of course, in an entirely different situation from the Italians or the French. So that's really my reaction on this thing. As far as our party was concerned, I think, you see, we produced in, what year was it? 39, I think it was. The first draft of our program, The British Road to Socialism, where the concept was put forward of a changeover without necessarily having to storm the barricades in that way, you see. But we've been in a much more difficult position, in my opinion, in respect to the fact that we are in a country which is the only a political movement that's base is almost exclusively in the trade union movement. You can't show all the other continental socialist or social democratic parties are individual parties. The German, the West Germans, in France, there is a base of support for the communists in the UGT and the CGT. But there's also a number of other important political trade union organisations, and you go to the others, it's the same. And the CGT doesn't have a sort of direct affiliation to the Communist Party. In Britain, you have this Labour Party with a decreasing individual membership at this moment, a decreasing individual membership at this moment, but with an increasing mass base as far as the trade unions are concerned. But of course, with all the effects that can happen from that, as you know. So that's the difference that we were faced with here. And that made, in my opinion, without making any excuses, much more difficult the advance of the party and the building of it up on an individual basis. You've only got to compare the influence that we have in the trade union movement with the membership of our party. You look at any of the trade unions, even in the AUW, where we had a setback. We've still got party members in the EC of the AUW, party members on the executive committee of the miners' union, and the other unions, we have party members on the on their executive committee and influence at lower levels too, district levels as well. So
just one final thing on this poem. When the poem was putting out this revolutionary line, a line similar to the one you've been having 10 years earlier, your impression for that, or the general party reaction to that, was that this was an idealism which was sort of out of place, that they had to get down to the practicality of it.
Oh, yes. And of course, you see, the difference between... there was a difference. You can't make a parallel like that about us previously and the poem. For example, we didn't have in our party at the time of the left... the sort of leftist line in the trade union, etc., we didn't have a strong Trotskyist influence, but the PUM was based to a very considerable extent on Trotsky's theories. So there was all the difference in the world between them and us in this kind of approach. In fact, of course, because of the way they were carrying it forward, this sort of, maybe immediate revolution is not the right word, but this action, you know, if I may digress for a minute, I would say that the line, not only of the Revolutionary Party, that's Healy's, or it was Healy's outfit, he's changed now, a new secretary's on in them, but the International Socialists and that have a similar kind of line at this moment in the Labour movement in Britain. The International Socialists, of course, work inside the Labour Party. Despite the efforts of the Labour Party on that question. That's the kind of line more that like the PUM line, yeah. You see.
What was your reaction during this time to Trotsky himself, to the phenomenon of Trotsky?
Oh, I was quite hostile to the Trotsky's theories.
For what, any particular reason?
Because I didn't agree that these three theories, after all, his theory of permanent revolution, and in my opinion, and his opposition to his opposition to the line of being able to not cooperate, but to exist side by side with the capitalists, coexistence, that's the term I was trying to find. It meant to me that I had to reject this policy because I think that the line that had been enunciated by Lenin and developed even by Stalin of coexistence, it was the only line that was logically practicable in the time that existed before the Second World War and still is the only line, and it's now in its sort of logical developments now the coexistence of the two superpowers and the bomb and all the rest of it, which is something that is rejected really by them. And of course, look at the slogans that are put forward. A general election, get rid of this Labour government, get a revolutionary Labour government. And so if there's an election tomorrow, the danger is there'll be no Labour government. no Labour government. And it seems to me, we're now getting right off the issue, it seems to me that the only possible hope is that we can get a change brought about by the trade union movement, which at the present moment is fully, or not fully, but is supporting this line, to change the policy that's leading the Labour government to disaster. But that's another subject over here.
Now, we've gone through this, it evolved into the party line had evolved into a consolidating democratic line, supporting the Republic, of going along the same road, working in harmony, harness with the Republican and Socialist parties. That worked very well in terms of Spain. It created a centralised army and administration and cut out the revolutionary excesses. When the thing was over...
Unfortunately, not sufficiently, but it did.
Yeah. When it was over, the Civil War was over, just before the outbreak of the Second World War, you learnt of the Soviet-Germany pact. How did most party members react to that?
Well, I can only speak... Yeah, look, it's very difficult to give an answer on that. You were part of an answer there yesterday.
Yes. Yes.
I would say most of us were taken by surprise. And there was an instinctive reaction against it. And there was also a reaction, political reaction, developed by Harry Pollitt and Campbell, and there was a bit, quite an argument on the executive committee of the party on the question. The thing that was the dominant thing that influenced us was this sense of loyalty and discipline also to the international movement. After all, we were members of a world communist movement that had an executive with executive power in Moscow.
Yes.
And that, in my opinion, had a very big influence, an influence on our party and the party leaders. That's all I would say on that.
You were, as it were, torn in two.
Absolutely.
What you thought you got to be doing.
Absolutely.
And presumably caused a lot of personal heartsearching.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about it, and some resignations. Not a large number, as a matter of fact, nothing like what happened when the Hungarian events took place.
Yeah. Just before we move on slightly to that, a second point. It was common knowledge, I think, at the time, and it's certainly been confirmed subsequently, that a lot of the Russians returning from Spain later met a rather sticky end in Russia.
Well, you had that reported yesterday, but listen, I don't see really now that we're in a position where we're really discussing the Spain thing and the issues in Spain. What we're now in is a discussion on the policy of the party, and I would prefer not to discuss it in this way, you know.
Well, I was just thinking relevant from the point of view of Spain because of the development of the Popular Front idea, which, although it was in France...
Well, we have set out at this present moment very clearly our policy in connection with unity and the issues and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But what we are doing now is we're really dissecting the party policy and the policies of the other parties arising from Spain, I think we've gone about as far as I would like to go now on this.
Okay, fine. You don't want to talk about, well, your personal reaction to the people who were, you know, who returned from Spain to Russia?
I think it was a bloody crime that these things happened. No question about that. I condemn that unequivocally. I knew some of them, just the same as I know a Kriegel in Czechoslovakia, and I think it was wrong what was done with him, too.
Why do you think Stalin did that?
What?
Why do you think Stalin did that?
I don't know, unless he had become, mentally affected. Because it seems to me it was so, how shall I say, illogical. Illogical. And of course, he himself was forced by force of circumstances when the war took place to recognize it to the extent he had to dig out some of the marshals because he had bloody well more or less beheaded when Tukhachevsky was executed, he had beheaded the bloody real effective leadership of his general staff. But that's something I don't propose to go into now. My position is clear on that. I condemn it. I think it was a bloody awful blot that it should take place in a socialist country, and especially the leading socialist country in the world, and at that time, the sole socialist country.
Yeah. Just coming back on to Spain, have you been back to Spain since the Civil War?
No, and I won't go back. I would love to go back. And by the way, the Spanish party's line is quite clear. They don't say stay away from Spain. And of course, we've sent back Nan Green has been over in connection with, but it's been in connection with trials, etc. Or seeing to get, I don't like to deal with this also, but seeing that some financial aid is being given, you know.
Yes.
And we have tried to raise, and directly in the party we've tried. After all, I was the treasurer of the fund that was launched at the beginning of, the year, to help Mundo Abrera to become a daily paper, and we raised about £1,250 for that, a lot of that from trade unions and individuals.
Yeah.
Not a great thing, but it was an effort being made by us, and on the top of all the other things that were being made, and that I was sort of more or less picked on as a name to be the treasurer of it. We got some assistance from some trade unions as well.
Presumably, having devoted a fair section of your life to Spain, you've still got a lot of feeling for it.
If there was popular government, I'd be away there tomorrow, my wife, for a visit. No question about it. No question about it.
Just a question
because
of principle.
They're lovely people. Lovely people.
Yeah.
And that. And well, you can see the attitude of the lads here to Spain and that. After a year's time. And, of course, look at the friends and comrades that are lying there somewhere, or their bones are somewhere there in Spain.
Yeah.
This is it's bound to be part of your life, isn't it?
Yeah.
After all, I felt enough about it to leave my wife pregnant to go there. Of course, I did it with her approval, but it's not an easy thing to do these kind of things. But of course, she's always subordinated herself to the party and to the needs of the party, because she actually was in the movement before I was, although she's younger than me.
Could you just say one or two final brief words, coming back to your first stay in Spain?
Yes.
Your actual function as a commissar, as a commissar of all the British, what actually did you do?
Well, I had the job of seeing to it, first of all, that the lads were fitted into their various positions militarily, in the battalion or in the company, etc. I had to help to get them to understand the differences that were existing with an army of volunteers, and stop that a minute.
The problem of letters.
Yes, letters. There was...
Sorry, I don't think...
All through Spain, there was a problem of letters. Now, I'd been in the British Army, and there was always a bit of problem of letters there as well, but we didn't have the organisation to ensure that the letters got through as effectively and as efficiently as they came, because we were in a foreign country, and the chain up to the battalion was going through Spanish hands, and you can understand that was a problem. And then there was a problem getting them back. it meant that you couldn't be sure of getting things back through the ordinary post regularly. Mm. A lot of extra things had to be done. Of course, something that helped it was there was from time to time people going back and they could take a bundle of letters with them. In theory, I know that it's illegal for people to carry a post, you know, you're defrauding the government, etc. But these were the kind of things. Then there was the ever-present problem about cigarettes, which I've already mentioned to you, and which stood out like a sore thumb all through the whole piece, complicated by the fact that any cigarettes that could be got of a local character were would poison to them, you see. I don't know whether many of them ever acquired a taste for them. I know in our centre, James Klugman has got a taste, I think it's almost an obsession, with these Galois, as you call them, the French. Terrible. Anyway, these were problems. Then there was the question of ensuring that as far as possible, when they were at a base like that, there were some forms of entertainment, you know. Maybe even some games that they could get, because there were local things, like there was a sort of Spanish billiards that some of them could participate in. There was cards, inevitably, and there was study. In other words, to try and get some of them to sit down and get some education in Spanish. But I must say, that was only, I would say, a limited success. Although later, men like Wilde and Cooney and that became sufficiently proficient in the language to be able to do the orders and to convey their main views, you know. Other people like Alexander and others built it up because they had a better education. They built up their knowledge of Spanish much more effectively and more comprehensively. Maybe that's the best way to put it. And then you had people like I mentioned this morning, like Russell, who had the necessary pre-education. You know,
yes.
Knew French very well, had a smattering, and then learnt it very quickly, and was able to be of a considerable help.
How did the idea of having a commissar develop? Where did it come from?
The Soviet Union.
Oh. And it was consciously modelled on that?
Well, I would say yes, to a considerable extent. Because I don't know, outside of the Soviet Union, there may have been in the old model armies like Cromwell's and that, a sort of kind of similarity, certain elements in it, you know, not in the same way, but with some basic principles like that, especially among the levelers and others. But it was really the political commissar, as far as I know, idea. It was the issue in the Red Army. There was a number of reasons for it. The illiteracy of a large number of the soldiers, the fact that it was a revolution and that political understanding had to be got and the part of it had to be learned in the process of the struggle. This, and they were proven to be of inestimable help, and even in the next war, maybe even more so there.
But who was responsible for bringing that into Spain? Do you know?
I don't know. It was, you see, that I think I would put it this way. It came two ways. The Spanish party launched the 5th Regiment. And the 5th Regiment became the nucleus of the Republican Army. Really. That's, you must say that. From the beginning, that was the process. And they introduced it in their 5th Regiment. But it was a natural thing for communists coming from either as emigres from France, the Talmans from Germany, the Poles, because the ones that were coming weren't the nationalist Poles. They were the revolutionaries, the ones that were members of the illegal Communist Party. Bulgaria, I remember the little fellow from Bulgaria, he came from Dimitrov's country. And that. And they were almost certain to bring this in, and they did.
Yes.
They brought it in. So I would say it was a natural outcome of the experiences that had been developed during the Russian Revolution.